This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joy 94.9.
Freshly dug Joycast.
Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
And this is Doug Pollard bringing it to you. Now, this is the time of the program now where we're looking every week at some kind of legal issue. And today we're looking at something that is usually very controversial when it gets into the press. This is about children with gender dysphoria and cases that have come up before the family court. And to talk with us about that, we have Sally Nichols from Nichols Family Law. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning.
Now, this is always causes a great furore in the tabloid press. You know, we hear about, you know, child of 14 allowed to have hormones to suppress puberty or sex change agreed for teen and all this sort of thing. What's the reality behind that?
I think the headlines understate the effort that the court and all the experts who assist children in this position to actually achieve their desired identity. There's a lot of work that goes behind the scenes, and if a case is actually running in the family court, it's dealt with very sensitively, and people's views, including the parents, experts, you often have to put a contrary view in terms of what the child's actually seeking to make sure that you've looked at all possibilities, the adverse effects if you don't give treatment, the adverse effects if you do give treatment. So there's a lot of protocol and thought that goes into this process.
Okay, well let's start. Let's do a little bit of hypothetical here, because I think that's going to be the safest way to talk about these issues. Let's take the issue of a girl who is approaching puberty and is convinced that she is in fact a boy. And now, in these circumstances, she can't just, not even with the support of her parents, she can't just go to a doctor and ask for hormone treatment, can she?
No, she can't, because often that hormone treatment has some irreversible effects. And legally, if that is the case, and given you're dealing with something gender identity, which is such a significant step, the courts actually state in Australia that that decision's removed from the parents. It's the court wants to know the parents' position, but the court needs to actually make its own decision.
So the decision has to be made by a court.
It does. It does. But what's, I think, tragic is not all cases will reach a court, because you really do need that GP to be sensitive to the issue and to understand what the symptoms of the child, and also the right place to go to actually explore that child's gender crisis.
Because a lot of people would say, well, you know, it's a normal phase. She's a bit of a tomboy. She's get over it. So on and so forth.
Well, that's right. And there are experts in a lot of the countries who deal with this discrete group of children. And the stats that I've been provided worldwide, for example, in the UK, the expert, Dominic De Ciglio, who deals with children in over in Europe, he probably has about 15 cases that he believes is genuine gender dysphoria a year. The Royal Kids Hospital in Melbourne would say 10. But then again, I've seen other stats that the Monash Medical Centre have put out in previous cases, where they say there are about 80 kids who they don't deal with them there, but who they actually think have raised that type of issue. So maybe a few of these children are falling through the cracks. But in looking at someone who has this condition, they've often displayed really dramatic symptoms from a very early age, as early as 4 or 3. For example, girls who have wanted to pee standing up, who have been really aggressive about the fact that they want to be dressed in boys' clothing, to be called by a boy's name. And it's really the impact on the child, the studies that I've read, that if the child's not condoned or allowed to walk around in the skin that they want to and to express that identity, they're often suicidal. And that assessment's made by a very discreet group of experts in Australia.
So in that situation, if a child feels that strongly, If the gender identity is that powerful within them, I suppose we should say,
yes,
then puberty is going to come as a bit of a shock, isn't it?
It is, and in the cases, the experts are really sensitive to that, and so are the courts. There are some children who, as they begin to hit puberty, for example, in the case of Re-Alex, which is one of our first reported decisions, that child, the distress leading up to puberty was really dramatic, and the treatment that the doctors were proposing was to halt that immediately, and the relief for that child knowing that he didn't have to walk around in nappies, so he would avoid going to the toilet, that he'd actually not have a period and not develop breasts was enormous. And the significant behavioural problems and aggression really dissipated after he even knew that there was a case exploring his wishes.
Mm. Now, we're talking about children who are below the age of consent, who are below the age of majority, so it's not a decision that can be made by the child themselves.
No, but the court looks at, and also the doctors from that point of view, looks at their desire and looks at their maturity, and there's an issue that's often involved in any medical treatment type cases, and that's Gillick competency. So the court will look at whether that child really understands the ramification of having that treatment. In the cases that have been before the court, on both occasions, the court looked at the child's wishes, and actually Alistair Nicholson, who heard Ree Alex, spoke with the child at the child's request and kept some of that information confidential, but really valued that child's wishes and desires. But in all the cases, the medical experts found that both kids didn't really have sufficient understanding of what all the ramifications were, so it was still appropriate that the court made the overall decision, but great weight was given to what they wanted.
Hmm. So, you say there's been two cases. Is that all, the only cases that you know about?
There are two reported cases, and I believe there's another case that's been heard recently that's unreported that I'm going to have a look at. Right. But there have been two, Ree Brody and Ree Alex, and both names are anonymous.
Yeah. And this is in the family court.
That's right.
This is in the family court, which is obviously the appropriate place for this to be handled, because at that age, it's a family, very much a family issue.
Well, the family court does, as you listened maybe to Lucy last week,
indeed,
with the intersex children, the family court has an amazing role that I don't know whether the general community understand, that often we're dealing with issues that Parliament doesn't want to touch, and or hasn't really caught up with social change sufficiently. And because the family court have got such a broad social welfare jurisdiction for children, relating to an age jurisdiction, it means that all sorts of issues will come before the court, and the judges will really be looking at the end of the day at the best interests of children. And that's their guidance in relation to a lot of these very discrete issues. With issues such as Ree Alex and Ree Brody, there is a special medical procedure protocol that the court's developed, but that protocol doesn't often fit in as neatly as the cases it was originally meant to deal with. Originally, it was meant to deal with the sterilisation of intellectually disabled girls, and that's very difficult to slot into that procedure, intersex children and children with gender dysphoria, especially as we don't see gender dysphoria as a malfunctional disease.
So, in effect, the courts are, to some extent, making law, aren't they, and not just applying law?
Well, they are, to the best of their ability, using the best interest tests and also looking at the ramifications, as I said, each way to giving the treatment. They're really making these decisions with little guidance from Parliament.
Yeah, and that of course, is one reason, I think, why these decisions are always so very contentious, because it is, as you say, Parliament won't touch it, so that it's left to the law to do it. But then when the judges do make these decisions, they get a pasting in the tabloid press.
I really feel for them, and I really know the agonising that they make. They are very, very much centred on what's best for the child. But I know in cases such as Ree Patrick and the tragedy there, that the judge and counsel and all professionals involved were absolutely distraught about the result at the end of the day.
So what was Ree Patrick?
Ree Patrick was the case where a lesbian couple had a child with a donor, with a gay man, and who effectively fathered the child, and they had an agreement that he would see the little boy once a month, and there was a reneging on that agreement. And it was a very important case to look at the child's right to have a relationship with all the adults involved. Mm. And the tragedy in it was one of the mothers committed suicide and killed the little boy at the end of the trial when the father was granted rights of contact.
Yeah, which is a very, very tragic outcome, as
you say.
Yeah,
it was.
And would you like to see, and let's get you sort of slightly out of this area, do you think the politicians should get into this area?
Oh,
do you think
absolutely.
There should be law on this?
I think they should catch up with the times. And there's a whole group of children out there who aren't actually looked after by Parliament and looked after by our laws. The children of gay couples, lesbian couples, when those couples, if that family breaks down, there should be the same presumptions, in my view, that there are for biological parents.
Right. Well, we'll continue with this discussion in a moment. You're listening to Freshly Dug on Joy 94.9. We're talking with Sally Nichols from Nichols Family Law. We're talking particularly about children with gender dysphoria, but also about other legal issues affecting gays and lesbians. And we're talking with Sally Nichols of Nichols Family Law. We're talking about children with gender dysphoria. Now, what I wanted to look at now before we go, because we haven't got a huge amount more time, but I just wanted to stress, and I want your take on this, these decisions that were made to allow these children to have the hormones to stop puberty, to progress towards a sex change, all that. As I say, there were a lot of people out there saying, no, it's too young, can't do this, all wrong, very bad, you know, girls are girls, boys are boys, all this nonsense. What was the outcome for the children? I mean, was it the right decision in the end, do you think?
Oh, the outcome was extremely positive. Both kids, prior to the treatment, were suicidal. They were distraught. They were suffering from chronic depression. It wasn't organic depression. It was their environmental depression. They were so stressed and not being able to present as the identity they needed to be. And afterwards, they've integrated. They're happy. They've been empowered. They're in excellent schools that are really sensitive to their needs. And they're doing really well.
What sort of age are they now?
Now it's going to...
Roughly.
Rely upon my mathematics. I think Alex now will be over 18, so yes. It'd be really interesting to know how he's going. When I last heard, Alex was going really well and mm-hmm. was really happy, and Brody probably would be in about year 10.
Mm-hmm. So it was definitely the right decision to make, and all that effort was worth it.
It was. Brody was quite tragic in some circumstances. So the father was quite opposed at the beginning, mm-hmm. and even though towards the end, during the process, the father said he would support whatever decision the court made, the history and the abusive SMS messages, for example, that he used to send his son regularly about his desire to be a boy was quite disturbing, and we often feel for Brody in terms of that ongoing relationship.
Must be quite strong kids then.
Well, the desire is so strong. When I've met the experts and listened to their reports about these children, it is an absolute unleaning identity. Some kids change. They say some do, but they need to be given the opportunity to be able to walk around in that skin, and they might shift. And if they do, they do. Although some of the hormonal treatments are irreversible, they can still revert back. Major surgery doesn't happen until after the kids are 18.
No, that's the other point I wanted to make. Mm. That you said that the treatment has some irreversible effects, but
yes.
There are also some reversible ones.
That's right. I mean, there's a masculinization that I can't even pronounce. If that makes sense, but that does stay with the kids who have the hormonal treatment, the blockers and the testosterone after 16. But it's not. They can still reproduce. That's not going to affect their ability to reproduce if they revert back to being female.
And they could also have courses of female hormones later on, presumably.
That's right.
Yeah. So, well, I'm glad to hear that the family court is actually sensitive to this and from what you're saying, handling it well.
Very well. Alistair Nicholson started it off with a fantastic process, and it's been carried on.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you very much for your time today, Sally.
My pleasure.
It's been fascinating hearing about this. And are you coming back next week, or which one of you is coming back next week?
Do we know yet? I think our dear Christina's coming back. She'll be coming back, but it was a pleasure to be here.
Well, you're always welcome.
Thank you.
You're always welcome. And we'll see Christina next week. Thank you very much for your time today.
My pleasure.
That was Sally Nichols there from Nichols Family Law.
You can find more Joycast and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.